Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How's it all going up there? People were a bit worried last week that we didn't actually talk about our own lives for a few moments, so I don't want to deny them that this week.
No, of course not. No, it's still lovely up in Edinburgh. Yeah, having a great old time. I go home tomorrow on transfer deadline day, so... You know, it's quite exciting. I'll be actually someone on the move on deadline day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Returning from Edinburgh to London.
On a train, glued to your laptop.
Not a customary mode of transport for players on deadline day, is it? Usually it's planes or helicopters. In the most exciting cases, helicopters. But
well,
I'll be taking public transport.
Hang on. Didn't thingy-me-jig turn up to a training ground in a car?
Yeah,
remember?
That's true.
Peter Odemwingie
just turned up.
It would be awesome if he turned up on a train tomorrow, his own, like, Thomas the Tank Engine steam train.
No one's using trains, though. They're too prone to delay. That's the issue.
That is the problem. Few leaves on the tracks and it's all fucked.
Exactly. Imagine £50 million deal going down the pan because, I don't know, a few leaves on a few tracks. It's not worth the risk. But yeah, no, all's well. What about yourself?
It's well. It's also well. My car is broken, which is unfortunate.
In what respect?
In the respect that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, that way. I don't know what it is. We went out yesterday and parked up, and then we had to get an emergency battery recharge. And we got home, turned the car off, turned it on again, and it just kind of makes this clicking noise. And then when I opened the door, I went in to check it this morning and just, you know, to see had it magically fixed itself overnight, because I believe that those sort of things can happen.
Sure, it can heal itself, definitely.
Yeah. Nothing. And when I opened the door, there was just a weird sound from the engine. It was just kind of this like dig, 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 dig. And the engine wasn't even on. So I suspect the car could be possessed.
Right.
That's my mechanic hat on there.
So you've got a priest coming out, have you?
Well, yes. First the priest, then I might call a garage.
Okay, well, give the priest a whirl first. At least let him have a crack at it.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. So, but that's about the most exciting thing that's been going on in my life.
So you're not going anywhere on deadline day?
You're going stuck. Well, I could go on my bicycle, but again, you know.
I'd love to see that from a player. I'd really enjoy that if someone turns up at London Colney tomorrow on a penny farthing.
That would be good. Or a rally chopper. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
We'll talk transfers, I think, a little bit later on, because clearly that's going to be the subject of some discussion. And just judging by some of the questions that we're getting in, people seem to be quite interested in this whole transfer thing.
I think it could take off, this whole deadline day thing.
As if we're going to be involved or something. I don't quite understand, but there you go. We'll touch on that a bit later on. But let's start then with the weekend's events. And, a 1-0 win away from home at Newcastle. Not an unusual scoreline there, but in the circumstances, a good result in the context of the weekend. But I think people wanted more from us in terms of the performance, playing against 10 men. Should we have won it by more? Does it matter that we only won it 1-0? What's your take?
Well, I think it's really important that we did win it. I think had we dropped, you know, a couple more points, then suddenly our start to the season would have begun to look a little bit ropey. And I think in the context of some of the other results this weekend, it's fantastic that we got the win.
Chelsea.
I mean, what's going on there?
I don't know. Are they in crisis? I mean, are we in crisis? What's a crisis?
I don't know. The parameters always shift. Mm. It's very funny, though, regardless.
Yeah.
And obviously, Liverpool's result, pretty extraordinary.
And
as
also
well.
Manchester United.
Yeah. I have to say, Bafétimbi Gomis probably has my favourite celebration I've seen for some years.
It was terrifying.
Yeah. I really enjoy it. Speaking of possessed, I do feel like that's what happens to him when he scores.
He did, like, yes. I was afraid he was going to come through the telly.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
He goes fully into character, doesn't he? It's like he really engages in the sort of animal exercise that he's undertaking.
Yeah. He enjoyed that one for sure.
Mm. Yes, I think it's a good result. I mean, I think because it's the 10 men, isn't it, that skews it. The fact they were down a man and that we dominated so much and yet still required an own goal to get the win is probably what brings about the concern.
Yeah, the worry is that this would have been a great chance perhaps to sort of open the floodgates, if you like, when you're playing against 10 men, a team who's been down to 10 men from the 16th minute. No arguments with the red card, of course.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. I was just checking. You're looking perhaps at your strikers, someone like Walcott, for example, who's been given a chance to play up front because maybe the manager felt this was the best kind of game for him to play in when it was 11 versus 11. The fact that when it went, 10 versus 11, Newcastle sat deep and then Walcott disappointed.
Well, yeah.
Even in the context of the overall team performance, I thought he was very disappointing. You know, this idea that he just doesn't get involved enough. Games can pass him by, and that's true whether he's on the right-hand side or playing up front, but then he missed two great chances.
He did miss two great chances. That's the thing that will stick in the craw for a lot of people. I do think that we selected a front three, with Oxlade-Chamberlain, Alexis and Walcott for a very different game than the one that actually unfolded. That's a trio with loads of pace who offer you a threat on the counter-attack. And then actually we didn't have to play like that at all, because once Newcastle went down a man, they sat very, very deep. Mm. And I definitely don't think that suits Walcott's strengths.
Is there an argument that Arsene Wenger could have changed things around a little bit earlier?
That probably.
Olivier Giroud on at halftime, for example, might have given us a bit more in attack throughout that second period?
Yeah, possibly, because I think you could even have kept some of the attacking personnel on the pitch. You could have kept Walcott on, put him right, pushed Oxlade-Chamberlain, back into midfield, or Aaron Ramsey back into midfield a bit deeper. So I think that would have been a worthwhile change. I thought when Giroud came on, he actually did improve the shape of the team, albeit that it wasn't a brilliant individual performance from him either. There was that very wild shot, wasn't there, when he was put through on the left.
Yeah. That was just clearly a guy who was frustrated at being left on the bench. There was that moment where he did the, the roll your fingers motion to make a change. I can't remember exactly when that was in the game, but it was quite funny, probably after one of Walcott's misses, I think. But then to come on and, I think he held the ball up well, got it down the left well, and could have done something with it from that position. But the idea of just shooting way over the bar from there just spoke to the frustration that he obviously felt. And that's not the best way to deal with it.
Mm. Mm. No, not at all. And I don't know. What did you make of Aaron Ramsey going back into the centre? Do you think that was a positive step, or do you think that was... did we miss Mesut Ozil, do you think, in terms of chance creation?
Yeah, I think we did. But I thought Ramsey was all right. Created five chances. I mean, he made one for Alexis that was saved at the near post. He made one for Cazorla, which Cazorla hit straight at the goalkeeper. And late on, he made that chance for Giroud, a little flick, put him straight through with cruel to be. And I, if anything sums up our goal-scoring problems at the moment, it's Giroud with just the goalkeeper to beat, trying to be too clever and doing a little flick or try to chip it over the goalkeeper rather than just, put your foot through it and put the ball into the back of the net. Don't worry about how it goes in. Just make sure that it goes in. Maybe he's banking on the goalkeeper going down there or something like that. But, I think between that and the first chance that Walcott missed as well, brilliant ball from Bellerin on the right-hand side. There was just no conviction, was there, about the way that he attacked the ball, the way that he connected with the ball, perhaps just a little bit too worried that there's a big giant goalkeeper coming out, you know, at him, and he's going to get flattened. But look, get flattened and score a goal. What were we talking about? Ramsey.
Oh, Ozil.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably missed him, of course, but I don't think it had a huge impact on the way that we played.
No, I agree. I thought Ramsey performed relatively well in that role. And I don't know, rustiness is definitely a factor.
Mm.
You know, I still thought Alexis looked short of his best. I understand the temptation to keep playing because he's got to find his form somehow.
Mm.
But he's not quite where he was, certainly at this point last season. And, it's hard. It's hard to play against a team in Newcastle's position. You know, teams that go down to 10 men can be notoriously difficult to break down. And it's not a poor defence. You know, it's a defence who kept a clean sheet at Old Trafford a couple of weeks ago. That they are a lot more organised under Steve McClaren. So I don't necessarily think that... you know, we should be expecting to put four or five past them, however many men they've got on the field. But it's more that the chances that you've named, the likes of Cazorla and Walcott and Giroud, the chances they had that were quite clear-cut, that they were not able to take, I think that's the greatest cause of concern. Apparently, we've now had the most shots of any team in the Premier League and yet scored the least goals.
Yeah.
Which is quite an extraordinary stat, really.
Well, again, it speaks to a problem of finishing rather than creativity, you know?
Yeah. So, absolutely.
What do we do then? What, I mean, do you bank on these guys eventually finding their range?
Well, I mean, it's the same cast who contributed quite a lot of goals last season, you know, and didn't seem to have too many problems, with the exception of Danny Welbeck, who's not available at the moment.
Mm.
You know, there are players here who have scored goals in the past. Both Walcott and Giroud have, you know, been around that 20-goal mark in previous campaigns.
Yeah.
Alexis too. So I don't think there's any cause for despair particularly. However, the longer it rumbles on, inevitably there will be question marks about personnel. And with the looming deadline, I know we said we'd come back to it later, I think there will be a desire for someone to come in who can just... maybe spark something, if anything. You know, I think if it's not quite firing, maybe the addition of a new ingredient could be what's required.
Mm. All right, we'll come back to that. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain got the nod on the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wanted to see him back in the team. I was one of those people. I think he's one of those players that could be, you know, somebody who can improve this season and therefore will help the team improve in terms of his overall contribution. Involved in the goal, obviously, because it was his shot that deflected in off Fabrizio Colaccini. But overall, what did we make of his performance? Do we have to put it in the context of, you know, if we're looking at the issues that Walcott had when they went down to 10 men, was Oxlade-Chamberlain similarly affected? Or is he the kind of player that we're hoping can do more in a game like this, even when they do go down to 10?
I think you would expect a little bit more of Oxlade-Chamberlain, because I think technically he's that much better than Walcott. He can operate in tighter spaces.
Mm.
He has the creativity to, you know, beat a man using skill or invention. And I think he'll be a little disappointed in the showing. I do think it's a positive that he was involved in the crucial moment, because I think that's, in the past, that's been the problem with Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's performed relatively well across 90 minutes, but hasn't contributed enough those decisive, you know, moments. And I felt that he was quite direct in bringing about that goal, albeit an own goal ultimately. But I think overall, it certainly wasn't his best performance of the last couple of months, the pre-season period and the opening part of the season. But I still think that he's a player who is geared up for a big season. And actually, I've been a little bit surprised that he's not been more involved. I think there's a degree to which his mistake on the opening day against West Ham may have worked against him somewhat, because I think that he deserves a run in the side, and I think he's got a lot to offer, and probably overall a little more than Walcott to offer, particularly on that right hand side at present.
Mm. Okay, so you're saying let's stick with him.
I'm Team Ox. What about yourself?
Well, yeah, I thought he was a bit disappointing, to be honest. Things didn't quite come off for him, but maybe, you know, it's difficult to judge when he's played the first game, been on the bench for the next two, come into a game in which I suppose the circumstances are a little bit, I won't say unusual, but the pattern of the game changed considerably after the red card, no doubt about it. Newcastle sat very deep, defended. But, you know, he is one of those players who's got dribbling ability, he's got pace and power, and you would hope that he could provide in a game like that, you know, those moments where that you need to be able to drive at the opposition. You need to be able to spark something in the final third. I mean, look, we are brilliant when it comes to passing the ball from left to right, to right to left, from left to right, you know, and a few little triangles here over on that wing. You know, we're brilliant. We can do that all day long.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any team better in the world, perhaps, than doing that than us. Maybe Barcelona. But, you know, what Barcelona have is obvious cutting edge in the final third. And I'm not saying Oxlade-Chamberlain should be like Messi, but I'm just saying that that's clearly something that we need at times. And I think he's got the ability to do that, but maybe he's under instruction to be a bit more restrictive, to not give the ball away. I don't quite know, but I'd like to see him get a bit more of a run, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I think he warrants that. I thought our fullbacks played well, I have to say. Looking at the positives, I thought they both were very solid defensively and overlapped very well, Bellerin and Monreal. So that was good to see. And you know, I thought Gabriel and Koscielny showed some positive signs as a partnership.
Yeah, they didn't have a great deal to do, did they? But what they did, they did pretty efficiently. No big fuss. You know, I like what I see from Gabriel, to be honest. It's still very early days because I don't know how many times he's played for us. Are we into double figures yet? Do we know?
Barely, if so.
Yeah. But, you know, he hasn't looked out of place in any of those games. You know, he looks a tidy, tidy sort of defender, fairly efficient on the ball, doesn't do anything daft or silly, try and overplay it. There was one moment that struck me maybe in the second half. I think he was running the ball down towards the right back position and he was under a little bit of pressure from a Newcastle player. And rather than try and see it out and get caught like Lovren, he just stuck it out for a throw. Then we regroup and defend the throw, you know. So simple things like that augur well. So, yeah, that was a positive for sure.
I like him. He's got a nice balance between being quite assured but also quite aggressive. You know, he's quite proactive at times. He's not afraid to go to the ball, but he doesn't. He's not guilty of diving in. So there's a really nice balance to his play, and I think we'll see. Hopefully, I think we'll see quite a lot of him over the coming season.
Yeah, for sure. So look, 1-0 win. Can't really argue with the result. The performance won't have eased any fears people have about the problems that we're having right now. And then we have to figure out, does the transfer market offer any solutions? That is where we are.
Yeah, and not long to do that.
The window in Europe closes today.
Yeah, that's strange, right?
Yeah, I think it's because of the bank holiday in the UK today.
I see.
Means that the paperwork and all that kind of stuff, you know, the people that would be in work are off work. So that's why they've given it till 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Well, probably the trains probably aren't all running, I imagine.
Exactly. And there aren't enough rally choppers to go around for the players to get where they need to go.
Sure, there's not enough fax machine repairmen available to work today. I think that's going to be hard. I mean, Arsene Wenger spoke about it and said, well, it could work to the English team's advantage because they'll be the only people out on the market. But I wonder if you're trying to buy a player from a club who are not even allowed to get a replacement in on the same day. Does that hinder your prospects?
You would think so. Unless, you know, the only way you can do that is make them an offer they can't refuse financially. And then does that not put you at a disadvantage if you're having to pay more?
I don't know.
We'll go into the specifics of some of the questions, I guess, in the second part. But do you expect us to make any signings before the window closes?
No, I don't at the moment. I can understand why people would like to see some. I'd like to see some. I think it's possible and plausible. But if you ask me, do I expect it? I would have to say no. My feeling is that, you know, as Arsene Wenger would say, we are not close to anything. And I don't necessarily anticipate that changing. What about yourself?
No.
Emphatic.
I'd be hugely surprised if we brought anyone in. Hugely. You know, I think if it was going to be done, it would be done by now. I just don't think there's anyone out there that he wants or can get. Maybe there's players that he wants, but he can't get them. Like, if he wants Benzema, he can't get him.
No.
There's no point pretending that, you know, this is anything other than a hugely difficult situation, if that's the player that you want. But, you know, as well as that, as you say, things would have to start happening for players like that to become available. Like, Real Madrid aren't going to sell their only main striker to us.
Of course. Especially not on Tuesday, you know, when they can't get anyone else in.
But is there an argument then that we should be going after a different kind of player? That if we can't get a world-class forward or world-class striker, should we not be in the market for something else? Is there anything else out there that could make this squad better? I mean, when you put it in those very simplistic terms, don't tell me there's nobody out there that could make this squad better, you know, which is fairly understandable. But if he does buy, like, a wide midfielder, who's going to drop out? Is it going to be Alexis? Could he, you know, again, we come back to maybe playing Alexis as a forward and bringing in another attacking midfield player. Are we not criticised for having too many attacking midfield players? Would a defensive midfielder make any real difference to this squad if the problems are goal scoring? It's complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated. I mean, one that does slightly interest me is the situation with Victor Wanyama at Southampton, who appears to be setting fire to his bridges.
Oh, why? What's happening there?
Well, I think it's that there was a bid for him from Tottenham and it was rejected, and he, I think, has kicked up a bit of a fuss, and Ronald Koeman is sort of trying to convince him to stay, but he's being very difficult about it. Now, obviously, it's not good to see that, but I do think...
Why would he want to go to Tottenham?
Well, Lord only knows, but I do think in terms of a physical defensive midfield player, you know, which is something that maybe, in respect to not having an alternative to Coquelin, we could do with, he's definitely someone who I think Arsenal should be looking at. He did very well last season alongside Schneiderlin. But in terms of the attacking side of the squad, honestly, I really find it hard to identify potential talents. I mean, there's this guy who Manchester United are linked with today. Have you seen Anthony Martial? Monaco forward. They're talking about around 50 million euros, something like that, £35 million. I mean, that's the kind of player that who you imagine Arsene might have been looking at, a younger, you know, not necessarily an elite level name yet, but someone who's got that potential. However, I don't necessarily see him wading in at that kind of level with that sort of bid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive amount of money for a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
You know? But that's the market, though.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that is the market. And we either compete at that level or, I don't know, what do you do? Can you just say, well, that's a ridiculous price for that player when every player goes for that kind of money? At some point, you have to
I feel like now a top level player costs you in excess of £40 million.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this summer we've reached that, you know, with Sterling and De Bruyne and those kinds of fees.
Mm.
I feel like that's now the ballpark we have to operate in.
Yeah, and I'm not saying we should just go out and spend £50 million on some 19-year-old. But, you know, if the market dictates the prices and you're looking at players and you think, well, maybe not for that price, can't spend that much money on him, but, you know.
Bear in mind, we can afford it as well. That's the important thing to say.
Mm. What about, in terms of transfer business, anyone going out? I mean, Joel Campbell, for example, Matthew Flamini not involved. I mean, is there?
Yeah.
Would that give us some idea that if, for example, Campbell, who's been linked all over the place, were to leave before the end of today, because chances are he would go to
foreign team,
a club abroad, maybe that would give us a hint.
Maybe. I mean, I find it extraordinary that he's still here, to be honest with you. I was absolutely convinced he'd be gone by now. I mean, if he doesn't go, I'd say don't bother tuning in tomorrow. because, you know, I think if he stays with the club, it's probably because Arsene feels he's not going to be able to get anyone else over the line.
Yeah.
Although it would leave open the option of him joining an English club tomorrow, I guess. But I would expect him to go today, wouldn't you?
Yeah, if he was going, you would think so. So we'll have to see what happens between now and 11 o'clock midnight. So whatever time it closes. I don't know. I don't know. Again, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he stayed and was used as, you know, one of our forward line options.
Mm. Mm. It would surprise me, but then maybe not at this point. I mean, yeah. A few months ago, I would have said no chance, but given the lack of alternatives.
Now you have to say chance, not no chance.
Chance, guys.
Chance.
Chance.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with some of your questions in part two right after this.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Hello, welcome back to the AskCast Extra. We're going to have a look at some of your questions now sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog or at Arsblog with the hashtag AskCastExtra. There we go.
Well done.
Looks like you were doing it. Very professional. The first question comes from Senkwe Chanda. He's at Senkwe on Twitter. And he says, do you think the need to spend is overblown considering Chelsea, Liverpool and United's results this weekend?
I don't know if you could say, I don't know if you could conflate the two things, you know? It's right, always hilarious when Chelsea lose and lose at home and Mourinho is sad. Nobody can ever be unhappy about that, apart from Chelsea fans and Mourinho, of course, which makes it all the more enjoyable for the rest of us. Manchester United, Liverpool, you know, when bad things happen to them, I like it.
Mm.
I like it.
Listen, I don't mind it. I enjoy it.
I think we're all on the same page here. But what that has to do with us and what maybe we need to do in the transfer market is a separate thing. My feeling is that perhaps the reason for so much clamour in the transfer market is the need for more goals, something that Arsene Wenger identified, and he said he wants more goals from this team. Somebody sent me something interesting last week by email. I can't find it, but basically, in order to be champions, you need to score at least 83 goals in a season, something like that. He worked it out. He did like all the amount of goals scored by the champions. And apologies again, I can't remember his name. and we scored 72 last season. So we need to increase by at least 10. And then we have this stuttering start to the season where goals just, we can't score any. We've got one in four games and two own goals. Our strikers are missing chances. The team that is doing it and scoring goals and winning games, Manchester City, have addressed the fact that they didn't come close to winning the title last season by going out and spending a huge amount of money on attacking players. So you're looking at them running away with things at this moment in time. I know it's only four games and a lot can happen, but they've started very strongly. They've strengthened their squad, and there's a feeling that the addition of Petr Cech, as good a goalkeeper as he is, isn't going to be sufficient for us to score the goals that we need. Therefore, where do we find those goals?
You don't think he's going to help add the 10 goals we need to score?
No, I mean, look, I'd have him down at 5.
Right.
I think the onus
set
is on
pieces.
Yeah, few headers off. You know, when the head the ball comes off the helmet that he's got in strange directions. So that's why I think that there's so much interest in what we should do in the transfer market, not necessarily what we will do. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, of course. Do you think we're in danger of having yet another season where we're a player or two players shy
sure.
of where we need to be?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we are. Unless something happens between now and tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock, I think that's where we are. And look, you can be as rational and commonsensical, if that's the right word, about the transfer market and what's available and what money you have to spend and who you can realistically spend it on. I think, you know, you can be as sane as you like about all that, but at the same time, you can't get away from the feeling that we are players short of challenging properly and trying to win the Premier League. So that's kind of where it all stems from, I think.
I think that's very, very reasonable. Right, over to you. Next question.
This one comes from Steve Oakley, at Stephen Oakley 1. And he wants to know, do you think Cazorla becoming a central midfielder has hindered our progress in a certain way? He says, without him, Ramsey and Wilshire share 60 games as central midfielders. Oxlade-Chamberlain starts right wing. Players are playing in their natural positions. It gives us balance, pace, dribbling and power. But Cazorla, as effective as he can be in the centre, makes the team slightly imbalanced in some way.
Maybe. I can see the argument. I guess the argument would be that Cazorla, for everything he brings in terms of his ability to instigate play from deep in the midfield, to start moves off, and, you know, Arsene talks about how he's very good at early passes. He is kind of half of what you would want from a player in that part of the field. He doesn't necessarily have the defensive attributes or the physicality that you would hope for to thrive in that area. However, I probably wouldn't say that it's hindered our progress because, you know, him actually switching to that position last season saw a serious upturn in both our performances and our results. And I think when he's not there, we do miss him. That's not to say that there's not a superior player out there who could kind of do his job and some of the others you'd like to see in the centre of the park. But I think in terms of the options that we have, I think it is pretty important that he plays there. I think that we're fairly reliant on him to find Ozil early, I think, as much as anything. That the link between those two players seems absolutely crucial to our creative player presence. So I don't know if I'd say that it's been a hindrance, although I don't think it comes without its problems, especially in the case of Aaron Ramsey, because accommodating him becomes a challenge unto itself. What do you think?
Like, I love watching Santi. I think he's fantastic. But, the manager tried to change it early in the season and in pre-season. Yeah. So I think he feels that it's not quite what he wants from the way his team to be set up.
I don't think it was ever a plan, that's for sure.
No, it just kind of happened, didn't it? And, you know, 6 months ago, somebody said to you, your central midfield pairing at Arsenal would be Coquelin and Cazorla. You'd be like, what? What are you talking about? But that's where we are, and it seems, you know, we're not necessarily overrun throughout central midfield at any point. I think that's as much down to Coquelin as anything else. But yeah, I don't know. It still doesn't feel like a really long term thing to me.
Yeah,
I don't know what the solution is, though. That's the problem.
No, well, there's also a degree to which it kind of works, you know, and Coquelin's presence, as you say, kind of affords you Cazorla alongside him.
Mm.
Whereas when you went with Mikel Arteta as your holding midfielder, having Aaron Ramsey next to him to provide that much more energy made sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a functioning partnership as well, Cazorla and Coquelin, and I think breaking that up is a concern for Arsene.
Mm.
So I, you know, for the time being, I do think it's the way to go. But it is definitely interesting that Arsene, I think, does necessarily see it as the long term setup for his side.
All right.
Shall we have another question?
Yeah.
Okay. This one is from Michael, who's at Ula56, and he says, without any incoming players, what can Arsenal do to fix their misfiring attack?
Oh, well, that's easy.
Well, he's asking about people. We need to ask Arsene Wenger, really. He might have some inclination, although four games in doesn't necessarily seem so.
Yeah, I mean, look, the solution is it's obvious.
It's completely clear to us all.
Completely obvious. It's plain as the nose on your face.
And that is quite the plain nose, let me
tell you. Yeah, it is. How do you fix that? Well, try kicking the ball into the net. Now, I know it's
a
revolutionary. It is.
Yeah.
But when presented with an opportunity to kick the ball into the net, what we should do is kick the ball into the net and not high or wide.
Not over it.
No. Right. Or at the goalkeeper.
What about kicking it? Right, I was going to say, can we kick it just straight at the goalkeeper? You're saying no.
No,
that.
Don't do that either. This is how to fix this problem. It's really very fucking simple. Kick the ball into the net and don't not kick the ball into the net. After that, things become a lot easier.
You make it sound simple, but remember, these guys are footballers, not scientists.
Yeah, that's true.
You may need to break it down, you know, a bit clearer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what we could use this interlull for. We could go take them away, one of those team bonding weekends, you know, where you've got to, like, fall back or you've got to build a bridge over this river and help each other across and you could become a team. So one of those, but one of the exercises that we could do is kick the ball into the net. We could call it football practice, perhaps. So what we do is we'll get a goal and a net and a goalkeeper, and then we'll just make them kick the ball into the net over and over again until it becomes second nature to them. And then all of our problems are solved.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah. So someone tell the manager. Because
he's listening. Come on, he's listening.
He must be. Hello, Arsene. Well, this goes sort of with a question that Young Guns Opinion ask. AYGO blog, at AYGO blog. And he says, am I the only one who takes a huge confidence from the amount of chances we're creating? Surely it's only a matter of time before the players get their sharpness up and we start plundering goals for fun. Not just scoring goals, James. Plundering.
I love that. I love the use
like
of the word
plundering. Like footballing pirates.
Exactly that. I do see that argument. I do see that we are creating a lot of chances and that goals, as Arsene Wenger, I think, would say and has said, can be cyclical or cyclical. I don't know what
cyclical,
that word is.
Cyclical.
We'll go with cyclical.
Mm.
You know, I think sometimes it can take one game where it all clicks and, you know, suddenly the confidence returns, the finishing and the pressure comes off, because I think pressure is a real inhibitor, you know, when you're in front of a goalkeeper. And at least we are creating opportunities. I think it would be more concerning if we just weren't, you know, if there was just nothing at all firing in the attack.
Yeah.
The concern is, like, how long do you let that run? Like, if the current crop of strikers aren't finding form, which is effectively what we're talking about here, can you recruit somebody who can hit the ground running and transform things, or do you simply have to wait it out and hope the existing guys sort of click into gear?
I suppose the other way to look at it, or perhaps what Michael was asking in the earlier question, is can you do something with the shape of the team or the way the team is set up in order to change things around? I think he tried that, didn't he, with Walcott up front against Newcastle. That was an indication that he was willing to try something different. Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right, of course, that was necessary because of the absence of Mesut Ozil. But, you know, is there something else he could do? Change formation? Could we play two up front? Is that possible, or are we too wedded to this system and the only thing we can do is move players around within that framework?
I don't know. I think you're right in that he did try to change it. I think even the decision to deploy Aaron Ramsey, as advanced as he was, you know, that's a guy who offers a goal threat and he's trying to get him literally closer to the goal. I think that it's clear that Arsene knows there's a problem and is trying to address it. I don't think changing the shape of the team, though, will correct hurried finishing. That's something that has to be dealt with. You know, you'd think with on the training ground, but I don't think it's as if these players can't finish. I don't, you know, we've seen in the past, we've seen great finishes from them all. I think it's an issue of confidence and conviction for the most part. And unfortunately, I feel like the only thing that can change that is what happens out on the field. You know, I feel like it needs a game where kind of the storm breaks to an extent. Like my voice is.
Yeah, I was just waiting for you to cough there so I could cut it out.
I'll do it now, and then we'll cut it out, and no one will ever know it happened.
Yeah.
There we go.
Fantastic, brilliant stuff. It comes back to the team building weekend. Kick the ball in the net. You know, I think there is certainly an element of truth to what you're saying when it comes to the finishing, because Alexis scored 24 goals last season. Giroud got 19 or 20 in a smaller number of games than he usually plays. Walcott, I remain unconvinced, generally speaking, about Theo. But there's no reason why, from the positions that they've been in, that they shouldn't be scoring those goals. So I think there's an element of it just being a bad run, an unfortunate run in front of goal. That's not to say we can't improve our options, but given that we've both pretty much said that we're not going to sign anybody, we're going to have to hope that these guys find their shooting boots soon. Like, very soon.
Very soon indeed.
Mm. Yes.
Shall we do more of these questions?
Do it.
Do it now. Okay, this one, you touched on this a moment ago. This is from Drew Versch, and he asks, at Drew Versch, what makes Wenger and Walcott think that he can play central striker?
No idea. Honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I don't... Ian Wright was on BT Sport at the weekend talking about... Look, if you're going to make Theo Walcott a central striker, you start that training when he's much younger. He said 21. Maybe you put him in that position when, you know, he's 18. He's always kind of spoken about him as a central striker. But look, for me, the one quality that he's got as somebody in that position is the pace. So if you can get in behind the defence and put Walcott through on goal, he's not a bad finisher at all. So I can see a logic to it from that point of view. But I think in the modern game, you need to be a good footballer as well. That you need Absolutely. To be much more involved. Like 18 touches of the ball against Newcastle. Two of those were to miss glorious chances. I don't know what the rest of them were. You know, it's frustrating to me that he becomes so peripheral in games. Almost kind of hiding in plain sight, you know? It's not possible to pass the ball to a guy who's standing with three defenders around him. So move. Take some of the defenders with you. You know, it's simple things like that. The technical level that he's got, I don't think he's good enough as a footballer to play as a central striker in a team that needs that central striker to also provide a little bit of a focal point. And I know you play differently with Walcott up front than you would with Giroud, but I just don't see that he's got enough about him as a player. He just doesn't get involved enough. He doesn't seem to want to at times. You know, so I don't quite get it. I think it's like a desperation thing because Giroud is there and Welbeck is there, and he doesn't want to play Walcott on the right anymore. Certainly doesn't seem to select him there. Like, he'll pick Oxlade-Chamberlain, he'll pick Ramsey, he'll pick Wilshere ahead of Walcott now. And that's the way it's been for the last 6 months. And I don't buy that this has got anything to do with the injury. It's got nothing to do with the injury. You know, if he's going to play him as a central striker, he could play him as a right-sided player. So, I don't know.
So, why was his contract extended?
I guess because you don't lose a 26-year-old clean-cut England international who is, you know, at times a valuable player.
Right.
But whether he's worthy of that kind of a contract, that's another question.
Yeah. What about the games? Let's play sort of Walcott's advocate. What about the games where he has played a central striker and performed to a decent level? You know, I'm thinking of the FA Cup final or, you know...
Yeah, he scored a great goal that day.
Yeah.
But that was a fantastic team performance. I don't think it was built around Walcott as a central striker. The game against West Brom, when he played and scored a hat-trick, and a very good hat-trick at that, West Brom were on holidays. Final day of the season, they didn't give a shit, you know? So I think you have to put those games in context. And you could still probably count on two hands the amount of times he's played up there. There was one game, it was against Tottenham, wasn't it, in the FA Cup?
Yeah, he
played really well that day. Like, really well, surprisingly well. But again, that's the exception rather than the norm. So I don't think you can make any real judgments on Walcott as a central striker. I just don't think he's suitable for that position. I don't think it suits him at all.
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one. I do feel like I think Ian Wright's point's a really good one. You know, I think Walcott does struggle a little bit as a centre-forward, but that's so much due to inexperience in that position. Like, it's just so different from what he's been doing on the wing.
Yeah.
In terms of the level of hold-up play that's required, the level of link play. And I do think that expecting him to adjust to that at his age now, at this stage of his career, is very ambitious on Arsenal's part.
Yeah, you know what there is about the best strikers is that they have the gift of really clever movement.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily see it, perhaps, when we're watching games even or watching on TV, but, you know, you look at something like the way Henry moved, the way that Van Persie even found space. You know, Aguero, relentless, non-stop running, but clever running. And Walcott just tends to stand around a lot. So I don't think there's any way you can educate him to be a top-class striker. Now, if he scores 60, 70 goals in the next couple of seasons for Arsenal playing in that position, I'm going to have to eat my words, but I'd be very surprised.
Okay. Get ready you might have to eat your words and your hat.
Yes, my delicious steak
words
hat.
A la hat, indeed.
All right, here's one from Brian Toller at Envisage. And he wants to know, this season's Premier League will be one with a record low number of points. Discuss. And he's a hashtag TV money, which I suspect is to signal some equalization throughout the league.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I mean, it certainly seems to be true of most teams that they're struggling for consistency. However, there is a very obvious exception to that in the shape of Manchester City, who, as you mentioned earlier, are kind of steamrolling through the competition at the moment. So if they continue in that vein, then I don't think it will be a low points tally. I appreciate it's exceptionally early, though. It is good to see. I mean, obviously, it's great to see Manchester United and Chelsea and Liverpool losing in any context. But I think from a competitive point of view, it's great that those kind of mid-table teams, the likes of Crystal Palace and Swansea, have advanced to the level that they have.
Mm.
That said, I do think that there's probably still teething problems. I think that the transfer window is not yet closed. Some of those teams, United, for example, will strengthen. And that I think the table might begin to look a little bit more familiar over the next couple of months. That's how it tends to go. You know, it regresses towards a mean. I don't think it'll be a dramatically different season to any other once we're a few months in. What do you reckon?
I think we'd like it to be one with a record low, because that might mean we've more of a chance.
Yeah.
But, you know, City are 12 from 12.
Well, they are indeed.
So that's a good start. I do think it's more competitive. I do think there's more shocks than there were, but I think the best team will win the league by getting more or less the same amount of points that normal winners do. You know, it'll be somewhere in that region. As we're talking, the French Football Federation have confirmed that Anthony Martial is heading for Manchester United talks. So there you go. They're going to get that guy.
It's just a short train ride from Manchester to London.
Yeah, somebody...
It wasn't a bank holiday. Damn those leaves.
Leaves on the track again. All right, have you got one more?
I don't know. I don't know if I do, actually.
All right.
I think I'm done. Have you got any?
I've got one more here, and this comes from James Black.
I like his name.
Well, get this. He's at Rex Thunder, which is a pretty awesome name.
Come on, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's got to be like a private detective or something like that.
Yeah.
Rex Thunder. but anyway, he said, during the game on Saturday, watching on TV, I found myself in near constant agreement with Robbie Savage. What should I do?
Oh, God. I don't know. I was spared Savage's dulcet tones. I didn't have commentary on the screen that I was watching on. Did you hear Robbie Savage? Do we know how reasonable or unreasonable he was being?
You know, I've got to a point where when Robbie Savage talks, I just kind of hear this high-pitched buzzing noise. I don't really pay any attention to what it is he's saying.
You've tuned out, effectively.
Essentially. So I can't say with any certainty whether or not he was being ridiculous and daft and, you know. But The likelihood is that he probably was. So maybe there's something wrong with James that he should go see a doctor about. That he's hearing common sense from nonsense. It could be something on your brain.
I mean, ask yourself this, James. How much sense has this podcast made to you? If you found yourself agreeing with us, then I think something's deeply wrong.
Yeah.
Your thinking and interpretation's all back to front.
Yeah.
So I would definitely speak to a medical specialist.
Please, please go and get like an MRI or a CTI or an MFI or a KGB or one of those.
CGI, CSI? CGI,
CSI, yeah, exactly. Exactly. They can zoom in and go into the depths of your brain to see what it might be. I mean, the other thing that you could do, James, if you're in near constant agreement with Robbie Savage, and I think from the tone of his question, we get the sense that he doesn't like this.
No, who would?
Yeah. You could go somewhere else and start a new life. Fake your own death and move abroad. Take what meager possessions you have. Empty your bank account and just go live somewhere where nobody knows you. Start all over again. Take on a new name. Call yourself Rex Thunder. Hi, my name is Rex Thunder. You can have a little bar, Rex's Bar, on some beach somewhere. Sell sausages and beers. And that way you'd never have to worry about Robbie Savage again, James. That would be what I would do.
I mean, look, it's something we'd all like, to be honest.
Mm.
Mm. To be called Rex Thunder and not worry about Robbie Savage.
Exactly.
That's truly the dream.
This is actually an opportunity for James to live the dream, essentially.
Every crisis is an opportunity.
True, true, true.
We should remember that on deadline day.
We certainly will. Okay, well, look, safe travels on your train back down. If you see any footballers on the train.
I imagine Sky will have a reporter deployed at King's Cross
mm-hmm.
when I arrive in to bring you all breaking news.
Yes.
Yes, if I see any footballers in training, I'll try and coerce them towards London Colney.
That would be a good idea. All right, well, for now, we'll leave you and your rally chopper in Edinburgh, and we'll be back next... Well, will we? Yeah, we will. We'll be back next week with an Arsecast Extra. We'll do
oh,
that.
We'll be back.
Oh, right. Yes, you better
oh,
believe
we'll
it.
Be back.
Until then, folks, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.